Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Chet Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Mudar Hana'a Michaveiro, person who is restricted in getting benefit from his friend, V'nichnas Levakro, and then he goes in to visit him. Omeid Avalo Yoshev, he can stand when he comes to do Bikur Cholim, Avalo Yoshev, but he may not sit down. Umrapo Rufuat Nefesh, you can cure him at Rufuat Nefesh, Avalo Rufuat Mamon, the second half of the Mishnah will leave for the upcoming Dapim. Today's Dap is going to focus on the Mudar Hana'a in the issue of coming to visit or do Bikur Cholim. So here we have competing interests. We know that Bikur Cholim is a mitzvah, and in general, mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. So if it's mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu, what exactly is the issue with regards to doing Bikur Cholim? And that's the Gemara's first question. B'mayaskinan, what is the case over here? I b'shenichsei mivaker asurim al choleh. If it's a case where the mivaker, the person who's coming to visit the sick individual, his possessions are asur for the chole, the one who's sick, to get any benefit from, that the truth is, it's really not an issue of his possessions, because the issue is getting any benefit whatsoever. So they're just using that terminology to mean that all benefit was restricted. So the one who's coming to visit, his possessions, any benefit from him is restricted upon the chole. Afilu yoshev nami. Then even if he sits down, why should it be an issue at all? Because over here, it's only the possessions of the mivaker that are asur on the chole, on the person that is sick. And the individual here who's coming to do bikur cholim is doing it of his own volition. He's doing the mitzvah bikur cholim. And even though there is a derivative benefit or a side benefit that the chole himself is helped by the fact that he's doing the bikur cholim, that's not the primary purpose or reason for his Bikur Cholim. Primary purpose, in a sense, is a selfish reason, which is that he wants to do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. If that's the case, mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu, and therefore there's no issue in terms of both Amida or Yeshiva of paying a visit and doing Bikur Cholim. If it's a problem because the chole restricted the mivaker from getting any benefit from the individuals coming to visit him, afilo avein namilo. Then even if he comes in and stands there, it should be problematic, not just if he sits, even if he stands up. Because we have, of course, sitting down, then you're benefiting from sitting in the possessions of the individual coming to visit. If you're standing up and you walk in, both the Tosafot and the Rosh over here mention that there is the kamitana midrisat haregel. The fact that he can traverse the other individual's property already is getting benefit from his property. Now, even though by a chatzer, it's not clear that a person's drisat regel is deemed to be hana'ah, over here we're talking about going into his house or into his personal space. Over there, drisat regel, according to everyone, is considered to be hana'ah, and therefore you're getting a benefit. In addition, the Iran notes, umishum mitzvah leitle hatnuye mi'isura. And just because it's a mitzvah doesn't give you permission to violate the nether or to violate the Isur Chefza that's there. Now this goes back to something we discussed earlier in the Masechta with regards to doing a mitzvah where embedded in the mitzvah is Hana'ah. The example that we gave based on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah is a person is going to the mikveh in order to become Tahor. But when he goes to the mikveh, he's also getting Hana'ah from the waters. If he took a nether not to get Hana'ah from the waters, is it permissible for him to go into the mikveh? The Gemara over there says no. We saw that there was a machloket bishonim as to why the answer is no. Is it no because we don't allow you to get hana'ah if it's real, concrete, physical hana'ah, even though you're in the process of doing a mitzvah, but the hana'ah is not necessarily what we call integral to the mitzvah, and it's physical hana'ah, and therefore we don't say mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. Or the other daya there was that, yes, you can do that. Even if you get direct hana'ah while you're doing the mitzvah, that's permissible. What we're worried about is, after you finish dunking into the mikveh and you're coming out, on your way out, you're going to enjoy the water. You're going to tarry there. That's the problem. But the Ran Lishitato says over here that if it's isur, just doing a mitzvah is not going to help you. A mitzvah does not get rid of the problem of isur hana'ah. Mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu means that when you are accomplishing the mitzvah itself, which would give you hana'ah, or you get some geshmak out of the mitzvah, that's mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu, that's not an issue. But as far as real, tangible hana'ah, just because you're in the process of doing a mitzvah does not permit you to do the mitzvah and override the isur hana'ah. and to engage yourself in isur or a chepser shel isur. Over here, the choleh restricted the mevaker in getting any benefit from him. So if that's the case, when the mevaker comes in to do bikur cholim, he's still getting a benefit from the property of the choleh. He's standing, he's crossing his property. He's sitting down in his property. All of these items are getting benefit, even though he's in the process of doing a mitzvah, but he's also engaging in an isur chepsa, and that's problematic. So now we're in a bind, because if the direction of the neder is the case where it's the choleh restricting the mevaker from getting any hana from him, then the Gemara says, omeid or yoshev, we would say no go. On the other hand, if it's the other way around, if the mevaker restricted himself on the choleh, that the choleh is not to get any benefit from the mevaker, over there the Gemara says, omeid v'yoshev, it shouldn't matter, he should be able to perform bikur cholim, because over there it's mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu, and the fact that the choleh gets the benefit of this person performing the mitzvah, that's memela. That's a derivative benefit. And that derivative benefit is not sufficient to deem it a violation of the Isur. Based on that, you have a situation now where, according to either way, there should be no differentiation or distinction between Yoshev and Omeid. How come our Mishnah makes such a distinction? So we're going to have two answers to that question. Shmuel is going to present one answer, and then afterwards we're going to have the answer of Ula. Shmuel says, Amar Shmuel, Dolam, Bishenichsei Mivaker Asurim Alochole. It's a case where the possessions of the mevaker, the visiting individual, are restricted on the choleh. Ubemakom shenotlim schar ala yeshiva, veinotlim schar ala amida. It's a place, or makom. This is similar to Shmuel's answer with regards to teaching Torah. One is a place where they do pay for people who come and sit with the sick. Veinotlim schar ala amida. But they do not take compensation for coming and visiting and standing during that visit. So what Shmuel says is, he basically creates an ukimta in the Mishnah and says, well, in the instance where he's standing, they don't compensate for that. Well, since they don't compensate for that, that individual, if he comes and does bikur cholim and doesn't take any remuneration for it, then he hasn't provided hana'ah to the choleh, because the choleh wouldn't normally pay for this. On the other hand, if he comes to the choleh and he sits down and spends time with him, in that location, they would pay an individual for that. Since they would pay him, now he forgoes that payment, he's granting hana'ah to the choleh, because the choleh should be paying for it, and he's not paying for it. So what are you going to say? Let the choleh pay for it? That we've discussed before, that's like going into an even-handed transaction, where we say that both the mocher and the koneh benefit in that case. They both get a benefit from the transaction. And similarly over here, if the choleh is paying him for the service of being there, then that doesn't mean that he didn't get hana'ah, or it doesn't mean that there's not a two-way street with regards to hana'ah, and that would be problematic. Because the nechassim of the mevaker are sur on the choleh. So that's how Shmuel sets it up. The Gemara asks the same question it did previously in Shmuel's statement. It's my paschal. How do you know that the Mishnah is talking about a case where the minhag's like this and the minhag's like that? How do you come up with such a distinction and put it into the Mishnah? What precipitated such an idea or concept of splitting between them? Where it says, HaKamashmon. Now it's coming to teach you a din. Da'af b'makom shenotlim schar. In places where they pay people to perform bikur cholim. Ali Shiva by the Mishkal, they are allowed to take compensation for sitting down and doing Bikur Cholim. Al Amida lo by the Mishkal. But when it comes to standing up, then they can't get compensation for going. So basically, it's definitive that if you go in and you do Bikur Cholim standing up, that you're not providing any benefit to the Choleh in the sense of violating the Neder or violating the Isur Hana over here. You're going to perform the mitzvah bikur cholim. That's permissible. Mitzvah lav lehenot nenu. As a derivative of that, the choleh gets a benefit or enjoys your company. That's fine also, because it's a derivative benefit and that'll be okay. In addition, with regards to your getting benefit from the choleh, that's not a problem. There's no isur hana'ah there. The only isur hana'ah is for the choleh to get a benefit from the mivaker. And the fact that you're standing there and doing the mitzvah is perfectly okay. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to yeshiva, when it comes to visiting the sick and spending time there, spending time, you sit down and you spend a long duration with the choleh, in that instance, we start to get a little worried, which is, there are different minhagim. Some places had the minhag where they didn't allow you to take compensation for sitting with a choleh because we were afraid. If we paid you or gave you compensation in the instance where you came and you sat with the choleh, then you would also maybe take compensation when you came to be omeid, which again is not permissible. Or they also might start to help directly the chole, and that would be a violation of his neder hana'a. Now, on the other hand, there were other places at a minhag where they did compensate individuals for sitting there or for visiting the sick. So therefore, there were places that were machmir alatzman, shaloli toschar afale shiva. They had this chumrah. And in those locations, whether you're standing or you're sitting, it would be permissible for you to go ahead and visit the sick. Since there's no compensation, you're doing a mitzvah, then there's no violation of the neder. But there are places that are not machmir, that they do take compensation for yeshiva. In those locations, yeshiva would be restricted, but amidah, visiting as an amidah, would not be a problem. So therefore, our Mishnah gives you two definitive statements. One definitive statement is, be'amidah, it's always mutar. Because it doesn't matter what the minhag makom is, by amidah, it's always mutar to do bikur cholim, if the possessions of the mevaker are asur on the choleh. Same is true by yeshiva. If you go in and sit, our Mishnah says, you may not go in and sit. Now that is a definitive statement. There are some places where it would be permitted to go in and sit. Those are places that don't get compensation for it. But in places where they do compensation for it, you would not be permitted to sit. So if I say you're not permitted to sit, then I cover all bases there, and I'm always safe if I say to you, you can't sit. So that's what the Mishnah did. It took the absolutes in both of these cases. By Amidah, it's absolutely permissible. By Yeshiva, sometimes it's permissible, sometimes it's not. So therefore they just said absolutely impermissible. And that's how the Mishnah came to this conclusion, or talked about different locations that have a different minhag. And then, v'ibay teima, k'd Rabbi Shimon ben Al-Yakim, similar to what Rabbi Shimon ben Al-Yakim says, gzeira shema yishe be'amida. What we're worried about is that maybe he will tarry in his standing over there. Hachanami gzeira shema yishe be'shiva. That maybe he will tarry in his sitting. Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim is coming up on Daf Mem Bet. He's talking about a case where a person is mudar hana'a from his friend. He's restricted from getting benefit from his friend. But it happens to be like this year, a Shemitah year. So a Shemitah year, we have what's called Afkata Demalko. Hashem is mafkir, all the properties of everybody. So you're allowed to go in there and pick the fruit and take whatever you want. So if it belongs to God, then this individual can go in there and take fruits from the field. Because he's not getting benefit from the individual who owns the field, because he doesn't own the field anymore. God gave him the right to go in there. God gives him the right to go in there. He's not getting benefit from the owner. So Rabbi Shimon al-Yakim says he still shouldn't go in there because Shema Yishe Omeid. He'll go in there while he's eating, while he's picking, while he's involved in the collection of the crops. That is permissible for him to be in there. But if he's not engaged in that labor or that eating, then if he remains there, he's getting enough from this person's field, not under the rubric of Shemitah. That means that he's getting benefit for him. So Rabbi Shimon al-Yakim says, even though technically in Shemitah you should be allowed to go into the field, we prefer you don't because Shema Yisheh B'Amidah. We're worried about you tarrying in there or being in there even when it's not for a Shemitah purpose. So Hachanami, our case too, Gezeira Shema Yisheh B'Yeshiva. The reason that we don't allow you to go in B'Yeshiva is because we're worried that you're going to Yisheh. You're going to stay there. You're going to tarry there. You're going to, in a sense, loiter in the person's house. When you first go in and you sit with the Choleh, then you're accomplishing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So as long as you're accomplishing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, it should be completely permissible. Ah, so then why do we say don't do yeshiva? That's because of Shem Ben Al-Yakim, Shem Yishev Yeshiva. We're worried about the fact that you might stay there or tarry there longer than you should. Now, even though technically when it comes to Bikur Cholim, it's one of those things that we say in the Braita that it has Ein Lam Shiur. There is no Shiur to Bikur Cholim. You could be there forever, or you could do it as many times as you want, and it's still considered to be the mitzvah. So how could it be possible that yishev yeshiva, that you would extend your stay there, you would tarry too long, that you'd be past the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? So the fear is something that we mentioned before, which is the fear is that if you stay there, we're afraid that you might directly engage the choleh. Because remember, over here, the mevaker is asur to grant hana'at to the choleh. The restriction here is that the visitor is not allowed to give any hana to the choleh. Why do we allow him to perform bikur cholim? Because that's a mitzvah. Mitzvah lav le'anot. As a derivative of that, the choleh is a beneficiary. That's fine. But what you can't do is service the choleh directly. Because if you service the choleh directly, then you would actually be granting him hana b'yishirut in a direct manner, and that is still covered by the nether. And that you may not do. So what we're afraid is if we allow you to be there b'yishiva, shem yishe, you're going to tarry there, you're going to stay there, and you're going to start engaging with the choleh. So So even though there's ein shiur le bikur cholim, but there is a difference in the bikur cholim of sitting there and performing bikur cholim versus going there and actually doing something directly and giving direct hana'ah to the chole. Or the other possibility is the halacha brings this down, and it's a problem. Sometimes people want to do bikur cholim. They so badly want to do bikur cholim that they don't worry about the chole and themselves. And sometimes bikur cholim is no longer a benefit to the chole or a positive for the chole. When you overextend, you're welcome. Or you start talking about things that make the chole despondent or make him feel uncomfortable. So in all those cases, the person's no longer performing the mitzvah of bikur cholim. So those are the ways to explain why, even if bikur cholim doesn't have a shiur, that you could overstay your welcome. In addition, what the Gemara says is here is there's a difference between amida and yeshiva. By yeshiva, we're worried about the fact that you're going to get comfortable because you're sitting there. And once you sit there and get comfortable, we're worried about you then staying too long, overstaying your welcome, engaging the chole directly. On the other hand, if we permit you to do it through amida, the fact that you're already doing it b'shinui, that you're going in there and standing while you do the bikur cholim, that's enough of a siman, a heker, a reminder to you that you're only doing this bikur cholim because it's a mitzvah. But you can't then extend yourself, and then you can't stay too long. Might of it be just because naturally you won't stay too long because you have to stand. But also the standing itself is a reminder that this is a different type of bikur cholim than normal. And so that's why we would differentiate between amida and yeshiva. Now in general, the difference between amida and yeshiva is discussed by the Rishonim over here, who distinguish between amida and yeshiva. You look in Rashi. Rashi says the main difference between yeshiva and amida is that amida is davar arai. It is something that's temporary or passing, whereas yeshiva is yoshevi modetzavto. Is that when you sit down with the person, you keep them company. So the difference between amida is that it's just a quick in and out. Over there, that's why you wouldn't get compensation for it, because you're just going in and out, or it's really a temporary visit. And number two is why we wouldn't worry about you going there and tarrying or staying too long, because the nature of standing in bikur cholim is arai, is temporary. On the other hand, when it comes to sitting down, Rashi says, v'yoshivim odetzavto, you're there to keep him coming, to schmooze with them, to spend a long time with them. You get very comfortable over there. So first of all, when you're spending that duration of time, you might be entitled to compensation. And number two is, we're afraid that if we do allow you to do that, you might just keep staying, and you might never leave. So that's the way that Rashi describes the difference between amida and yeshiva. On the other hand, the Ran says over here, mitzvah bikur cholim can be accomplished through amida. You could visit the sick, you could stand there, and you could accomplish the mitzvah bikur cholim. Sitting down is not integral to the mitzvah bikur cholim. And that's the difference. If you do sit there, then number one, we're not going to allow you to do that, because that's already extending yourself beyond the mitzvah of bikur cholim. And number two is, then you can demand compensation, because when you sit there, then you're doing more than just bikur cholim. You're keeping him company, you're doing all these other things. That's already considered enough to allow you to get compensated for the doing the mitzvah of bikur cholim in that manner. The Rosh says something along the lines of Rashi about Tzavto, which he says that when it comes to staying and sitting, Ika hanam ruba lechole, there is a great amount of benefit to the chole. V'tzarich liten schar l'mishi she'etz lo kol kach. And you have to compensate people who are going to stay around for that duration. Because number one, they're giving up of their time. Number two is, it's extremely beneficial for the chole, for the people to stay. And since their staying has such a benefit or a positive impact on the chole, they're willing to compensate for people to come in and be mevaker cholim. On the other hand, amida does not have that deep-seated benefit for the chole. So there, first of all, we're not going to pay you to do it. And number two, we're not going to really worry about the hana'ah that's generated in that case, because it's all be'amida. And the amida itself makes it into something that has less toelet and less benefit to the chole. So that's the difference between standing and sitting, according to the shita of Shmuel. And we saw the differences between the Rashi, the Ran, and the Rosh as to how to differentiate between amida and yeshiva. And we also saw the differences between the concept of bikur cholim ein la shiur versus overstaying your welcome or engaging the chole directly when you have a neder hana'a, and therefore presenting a problem or a limitation on your ability to perform the mitzvah of bikur cholim, and that's why staying too long or tarrying might be problematic. That's the answer of Shmuel to explain our Mishnah. On the other hand, we have Ula. Ula Amar, Lo'olam Mishin, Nechsei Chole Asurim Ala Mivaker. It's the opposite way around. It's the case where the possessions of the sick individual are restricted on the visitor. Again, Nechsei, as I said before, it doesn't literally mean his possessions, because it's not just his possessions. It's really that he can't get any benefit from this individual. Okagon, Dolo Adre Min Chiyute. It's a case where he did not incorporate within his neder something that would be life-saving or life-altering. So what we're suggesting over here, and Rashi gave us a similar idea yesterday, which is that there are certain instances where Hana'a will not be subsumed under your neder. Rashi said yesterday, because Hana Mu'etet. Rashi repeated the phrase Hana Mu'etet over and over and over again, because Rashi believes that Hana Mu'etet is not subsumed under the neder. It's just too small to be meaningful in the context of the neder. So that type of hana was permitted under the neder. We saw the other Rishonim who suggested that the reason the hana was not problematic in those cases was because they were social etiquette. They were things that bolstered the concept behind the neder. We saw all sorts of reasons there that explained why this type of benefit would not be incorporated or encompassed by the neder. So now what we're saying over here is the same thing. That even though the chole took a neder not to get any benefit from the mivaker, that's only in the case where it wouldn't be life-threatening, life-altering. If it's something that would actually prevent him from being ill, improve his condition, or make him healthier, then in that case, he definitely didn't consider that during the time that he took the neder. And so because of that, it's excluded from the neder. Now, as the Ran points out over here, there are actually two different girsa'ot. But the Ran says it doesn't matter which girsa you have. The Gemara means the same thing in both cases, which is that he did not articulate this. He did not specify that he's leaving this out of the neder. It's an anan sade. It's an umdana dadat about what the chole meant when he took the neder. And based on that, we assume it's a supposition in the neder that he would not have included these types of items in the neder. And that's why it's permitted to come in to visit him. Even though the individual who's coming to visit now is getting benefit from either traversing the property of the chole or sitting down in the property of the chole, he's protected from the elements, whatever it is that he's getting benefit in visiting the chole. Mar says, Ihochi afilu yoshev nami. If that's the case, then even someone who is seated should be permitted in this case, because that would have been excluded from the neder as well. So the Ran suggests over here that when a person takes the neder, he only intends for hana'ah for regular hanot. If he doesn't include things that are etzim chayav, things that are integral to his life or to his life sustenance. And based on that, we would have carved out these items from the neder, especially bikur cholim, which we're going to see later on in the Gemara, is very beneficial for this sick individual. It helps reduce the sickness that he carries. And based on that, we would have said that he may have left that out because he wouldn't have intended to include such an item. Mar says, if he didn't include that item, then why can't he also do Yoshev? But Mar says, I have sher b'amida. The answer is that it's plausible or possible to do it b'amida. Eino chanami, if the only way to do the bikur cholim was to come in and sit down, that would also be permitted. But the fact is that we have another avenue or vehicle for accomplishing the mitzvah bikur cholim that will take up less hana, or be less, I would say, intrusive in terms of taking hana or benefit from the person who restricted you in benefit, so we're going to opt for that. So if you have a choice to do it amida and yeshiva, we're going to tell you to do it amida. Since there is that possibility of amida, then the yeshiva wasn't carved out of the nether. Since you can get all the benefit you need through amida, that's what you carved out of the nether. Yeshiva, you did not carve out of the nether. If it was impossible to accomplish it through amida, then we would assume that also yeshiva was carved out. Gemara says, Meitave. We have an issue now, which is, Chalahu nichnas levakro. If he fell ill, the individual is allowed to go in and visit him. Chala bino, if the child of the individual got sick, sholo b'shuk, you're allowed to ask him the shuk, you're allowed to inquire as to the health of the child, but you're not allowed to go in there and visit the child. Now, bishlam ala ula, according to ula, we can explain this distinction. Because, damar b'shinich se'chole asurim ala mivaker, When we're talking about the possessions of the chole being restricted on the visitor, ukagon to lo adre min chiyute shapir, then it makes a lot of sense. Because then, according to Ula, in the instance where the chole, the sick person, took a nether where he would not get benefit from this other party who's coming to visit him, then that party shows up to visit him. So we just said before that when a person takes the nether, we have an dadat that he excludes this type of item from his nether. So therefore, that party can come in and can be mevaker cholim because we assume that that was carved out of the nether. But that would only be true vis-a-vis himself. When we're talking about the injury of himself, then we'll say he takes the nether and he excludes that piece from the nether. But when it comes to his child, you can't say that. You can't say he took a nether and then he carved out his child from that. That doesn't make any sense. And therefore, there would be a distinction between visiting the person themselves when the chole said that this other party cannot get hana from him. There we would permit him to come in because of chiyute. There is this supposition. There is this stam havi kimifarish. It's as if you stated it that you're excluding these items. On the other hand, if he comes to visit his son, that he may not do. He may not visit the chole's son because the chole would never carve out his son. That's not something you can assume that he had in mind or was limited in some way in terms of his nether. So that breita can be easily explained according to Ula's logic. Elo l'Shmuel, according to Shmuel, Domar Mishich, Nichsei Mivaker Asurim ala chole, that the case is a case, that's the case in the Mishnah, and the Gemara is assuming whatever's true in the Mishnah is also true in the breita, that it's a case where the possessions of the Mivaker are Asurim ala chole, Maishnahu, Maishnah beno. Why should it matter if he goes to visit the individual himself? It should be permitted because mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. If he goes to visit the son of the chole, it should be permissible as well. It should be permissible for two possible reasons. One is that it just like you're doing a mitzvah when you mevaker the chole himself, then so too when you visit his son, then you're also doing a mitzvah. That's number one. Number two is the iser anah is coming from the visitor to the party that is sick. Who says that he even included his son in the nether? Maybe she better go to visit the son because the son wasn't included in the nether at all. And if that's the case, that means that both you are permitted to visit the person themselves that are sick as well as their child. So then that's what the Gemara asks over here. Maishnahu, Maishna beno. Why are you making any distinction between him and his son? The din should be identical between him and his son. Right? So if you look in the Ran, he says exactly what you're saying. Klomar, Dadarabba, Bibno, Shari Tvesh, and Mudar Mimenu. Vi Mudar Nami Bibno. And even if he was included in the nether, then what's the difference? What's the difference between him and his son? In either case, it should be completely permissible because you're doing the mitzvah bikur cholim and mitzvah la leinu nitnu. So Amalacha, Shmuel will respond to you and say there's a difference between the Mishnah and the Braita. Matnitin, our Mishnah is a case, b'shenichsein b'vakir asurim ala chole. The Mishnah is a case where, like we explained before, where the possessions of the visitor are asurim on the chole. And he's permitted to do this anyway. Because he's doing Bikur Cholim. When he does Bikur Cholim, mitzvot, lav lehenot nitnu. Ah, so he can do Amidah. What about Yeshiva? Well, with regards to Yeshiva, we gave two reasons why he may not be able to do Yeshiva. It's either because normally you get compensated for that, and if he waives the compensation, he's giving benefit to the Chole, or Shem Yisheh B'Shiva. We have Shem Ben Yochim's reason that we're worried that he's going to overstay his welcome. He's going to stay past the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So for that's the way we explain the Mishnah. The Braita is like you said. Ula, b'shenichsei chole asurim ala mivaker. The case where the possessions of the chole are restricted to the mivaker, to the visitor for getting hana from the chole. So in that case, I agree that the distinction that Ula made is correct. And the fact that he made such a distinction is very explainable, or makes the Braita very explainable, and I agree. That's the case here. But I disagree with the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, my Paschal. How do you know that? How do you know the case of the Mishnah and the Braita are different? How do you know the case of the Braita is a case where the Chole restricted the Mivaker and getting Hanah from him? And how do you know the Mishnah is talking about a case where the Mivaker restricted the Chole from getting benefit from him? So, Amar Rova. Rova explains it. Shmuel Matnitin Kashite. Shmuel had a difficulty with the Mishnah. My Iria Detani Omeid Avalo Yoshev. Why does the Mishnah distinguish between standing and sitting? So Shvam Ino, it must be the Nichsei Mivaker Asurim Ala Chole. Talking about a case where it's the possessions of the visitor that are Asurim Ala Chole, and therefore we would distinguish between Amidah and Yeshiva, either because of compensation or because of Shem Yisheh. But there we can explain based on that, why there is a difference between Amidah and Yeshiva. Now the truth is, Ula also explained why there was a difference between Amidah and Yeshiva, but his explanation, we'll say, is a little more dochak, which is the reason he says, why is it that Yoshev is not permitted? Yoshev is not permitted because you could do it through Amidah. So, concept, or that answer, that since you could do it through Amidah, Yeshiva is not necessary. And because he doesn't buy that answer, therefore, he has stuck in the Mishnah trying to explain how you distinguish between Omed and Yoshev. And the only way he could explain it is if he says that the case in the Mishnah is the case where the visitor made himself a sur to the chole, that he does, the chole is not permitted to get any benefit from the mivaker, from the visitor. And then we could distinguish between Amidah and Yeshiva. The Iran says, Lini alocha kaimelon kishmuel. We pass in here like Shmuel, the cave into Rova mifarish milte. Rova comes in here to help out Shmuel and explain how Shmuel reconciles between the Mishnah and the Braita. Hilkach, therefore, kishenichse chole asurim al ha mivaker. When the possessions of the chole are restricted on the visitor, then ichnas levakro afil yoshev. You can go in to visit him and even sit down. The yeshiva nami chiyute de chole. Because sitting down is also something that gives life sustenance to the chode. And he certainly didn't subsume that in his nether. Never he didn't cover it. So it's a case where when the chode says that the mivaker cannot get any benefit from any of my property, then in that case, he never intended with his nether to block the ability of somebody to come and to provide life-saving services like bikur cholim. And therefore, he can do it any way he wants. Sitting, standing, whatever he does is fine. Aval. If his son got sick, he may not enter into the house whatsoever. He's only allowed to ask him about it in the shuk. This is all in a case where the chole put the restriction on the visitor. That is what we assume he meant. That he did not restrict himself from getting hanan, that is life-saving. In a case where the mivaker took the nether, and he restricted himself from getting benefit from the possessions of the chole, he's not allowed to enter the house whatsoever. Because over there, you can't say that he accepted it or he carved it out of his nether, because it's not his chiyute. The chiyute is of the chole. But that's only a person who takes the nether about themselves and says that someone else may not get hana from them. In that case, we would assume that they carved out things that would provide them such life-saving services. On the other hand, if the person who's taking the nether is not the one who is the restricted party, so for instance here, the mivaker took a nether that he won't get any benefit from the chole's property, he doesn't have in mind to carve out something that would be to the benefit of the chole and bring him life-saving services, because it's not about himself. That's about the chole, and therefore he would not have carved it out. Therefore, the din will be different between who took the nether to restrict the mivaker in the possessions of the chole. If it's the chole himself, then we say he carved out the right of the mivaker to come in, and therefore the mivaker can perform bikur cholim, omed video, or yoshev. On the other hand, if it was the mivaker that took the nether, then there's no carve out, because he wouldn't have carved out an area to help out the other individual, to give him life-saving services. That clearly was not what he had in mind, and that's not something we can say is an umda nedat when he took the nether. On the other hand, case where the possessions of the visitor are restricted on the chole, nichnas levakro omeid, then that's our Mishnah. You can go in to visit him while you're standing. Because there you're obligated to do it for free. And you're doing your own mitzvah. You're doing the mitzvah of bikur cholim, and therefore you are mitzvah lavla, and no, it's not a problem. And the other party is that it gets derivative benefit, indirect benefit, but not direct benefit. But he may not sit there. Even in places where they do not get compensated for sitting down, nevertheless, we won't let you sit down. Because we're afraid that you're going to stay or tarry too long. And so even if you're not taking compensation, there's a secondary problem, which is what was raised by Rishim ben Eliyakim, that if we let you sit, you're just going to overstay your welcome or possibly give direct benefit to the chole himself. So now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Reish Lakish, remez the biker chole min ha-Torah minayin. How do we know that Bikur Cholim is from the Torah, or where do we find such a remez in the Torah? The truth is the Gemara in Bava Metzia talks about the source for Bikur Cholim, and it seemingly is not what Reish Lakish is after over here, which is the real source of Bikur Cholim. That's because there may not be any mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, the way that many formulate it. The Rambam included, Mishneh Torah formulates Bikur Cholim not as an independent mitzvah, but it's a subcategory of doing chesed. The requirement to do chesed and to take care of others, that manifests itself in different ways. One of those ways is Bikur Cholim. But not that Bikur Cholim itself is a separate and distinct mitzvah. It's just a branch of the mitzvah of chesed. So, if that's the case, what the Gemara is asking here is the remez of Bikur Cholim in the Torah Minayin, which is where do we find in the Torah that there is this concept of Bikur Cholim, or that we see that Bikur Cholim is something important or part of the world of chesed. So that'd be more the nature of the question. The Rosh says over here, remez the Bikur Cholim in the Torah, Perush, remez mifurash, a clear and obvious proof to that fact. The Hadar Shinon Lei, the Baba Kama and Baba Metzia, the fact that we dashin in Baba Kama Metzia, mi Yochuba, inu mifurash. Over there, it's not explicit. There, it's a limud emulating a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and based on that, we assume that just like Hashem is Mevaker Cholim, so too we are Mevaker Cholim. That's not really a direct and obvious source for it. It's just an assumption that God acts in this way because we've seen him act in this way, and God is the God of chesed, so too we should emulate those acts. But it's not particular to Bikur Cholim. Here, the Rosh says we're looking for something much more particular or direct to explain it. Gemara says, Shinemar, im kemot kol adam yimuton, eile, upkudat kol adam yipakeid, talking about Hatat Korach. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, if these individuals die like regular people die, and they are upkudat kol adam, the fate of all men befalls them, then Moshe says, Hashem lo shlachani, then God didn't send me. On the other hand, if they die in a way that no other man dies, and the fate that befalls them is not the fate that befalls all men, then I am the Shliach Hashem, and this will prove the fact that I am the Shliach Hashem. So my mashmo, how do you learn out of this pasuk? Amarava, in kamot kol adam yimutun eile, if these people die like regular people, which is shein cholim, they get sick, umutalim barisatan, and they're laying on their deathbeds, ubnei adam evakrim otam, and then people come to visit them, ma briyot omrim, then what are people going to say? Lo Hashem shlachani. Then we can say that Hashem didn't send me. So if they go through the normal course of life, and they pass away like other people pass away, which is that they first fall ill. And then after they fall ill, people come to visit them, and they spend time in bed. And then eventually they pass away. If that's what happens to these individuals, then I'm not the messenger of Hashem. How you learn out the fact that there's Bikur Cholim over here is not so clear. Because all it says over here is that if they die, like everybody else dies, or if the fate of other men befalls them, that'll be fine. Who says here, who saw anything about Bikur Cholim? So there are two approaches to that. One of them is the word Pekida. The Gemara is using it as a double entendre. The word Pekida can both mean fate that will befall. It also, Pekida can mean to visit or to spend time with. And therefore, the Gemara says, Ufukudat kol adam, that they play Pekida, that they will be visited like all other men are visited. And so that's how they get to the Bikur Cholim aspect of it from this pasuk. On the other hand, the fact is that here we have a concept that this is the normal way to be and the normal way to act. And again, I told you that the fact that Bikur Cholim is a mitzvah of chesed, that we know. We just want to know where is Bikur Cholim even mentioned as normal behavior or normative behavior. So we say, Kudat kol adam, Rashi says, Oyer shebnei adam mevakrim otam, that the Pekida refers to the visiting of the individuals. On the other hand, there are others that explain here that the Raya is im kemot kol adam, that the normal way for people to die is that people come to visit. If they're on their deathbed, they're sick, they're ill, people come to visit them. And that's just the natural order of things. And it's not explicit in the Pasuk, but it's something that is well known in human behavior. And that's what is being referred to in the Pasuk. Darash Rava, Im Briya Yivra Hashem. So if Hashem creates a creation, is how Moshe explains to the people the test about what's going to happen to determine whether he is really the true leader and the true representative of Hashem. So he says that one of the things is if they die a normal death. The The other thing it says is Imbriya Yivra Hashem. Hashem creates a new creation. So it says, Imbriya Gehinom Mutav Tiyeh. If there's already a creation of Gehinom, then good. That's what it's going to be. Vim Lav. If there's no Gehinom yet, Yivra Hashem. Hashem should create it now. Meaning that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that they're going to go down into Gehinom. If it exists, that's where they belong. If it doesn't exist, Hashem should create it. Gemara says, Ahatanyo. What are you talking about? That Moshe Rabbeinu here is saying he's not sure if Gehinom's there or they should create Gehinom? We have a brighter. Shivat Dvarim Nivru Kodem Shnivra Olam. There's 7 things that were created prior to the creation of the world. The way that Ran explains it over here, the Ran says, is Alu B'machshava. That Hashem had in mind for these items when he created the world. Not that they were literally created beforehand in a time sequence, but simply that these were in his mind when he created the world. On the other hand, the Marashah takes issue with the Ran and says, no, it's literal. Over here it means they were literally created beforehand. It wasn't simply Alu B'machshava. It was that they were created at that point in time prior to the world. All of these items are what we call so fundamental or essential to the Kiyom HaOlam. So that's what's meant here, that they were either created before the world or Alu B'machshava, according to the Ran, is because the whole world revolves around these essential items, which are Eluen, Torah, Tshuva, Gan Eden, Gehinom, Kisei HaKavod, Ubeit HaMikdash, Ushmo Shel Mashiach. So the first ones are easy. Torah, which we know is the blueprint of the world, and we know that the Zohar brings down that Hashem Istaka Boraito Bara Alma. Hashem looked into the blueprint of the Torah, and then he created the world. So the Torah, if it's being the blueprint of the world, it either had to exist beforehand or it's so fundamental to exist in the world. Tshuva gives man the ability to survive in the world. If there was no chance or ability to do tshuva, then people would never survive. Gan Eden and Gehinom are the concepts of Schar Va'onesh, Bechira Chofshit, of the individuals. Kisei HaKavod and Beit HaMikdash are the manifestations of the presence of Hashem in this world. The fact that Hashem still interacts with this world and His presence is felt and exists in this world. Ushmo Shel Mashiach is that there's an end game, that there's a future and there's a hope in the future. So these 7 things are fundamental or essential to the world. The creation is really revolves around these ideas. Torah, how do we know that Torah was created beforehand? Dichtiv, because it says Hashem Kanani Reshit Darko, that Hashem acquired or made the Kinyan Reshit Darko at the beginning of His journey. And over there, it's referencing the Torah. Tshuva, how do we know that Tshuva was created beforehand? Dichtiv, B'terem harim yulodu, v'techolel. And then it continues in the following pasuk, Tashuv Enosh Adaka. So prior to the creation of the great mountains, and before the earth was stretched out, then Tashuv Enosh Adaka, man will return to dust and to nothing. And then they leave out the end of the pasuk, which is probably pretty essential to this, V'tomer Shuvu B'nei Adam. Come back to Tshuva. So you see that, prior to the creation, that God is saying to people, do tshuva. So you see tshuva before that point in time. Gan Eden dechtiv, v'yita Hashem Elokim gan be'eden mikedem. Mikedem can mean east, or mikedem can mean from before. So the Marsha explains, if they wanted to indicate where it was, it should say, v'yita Hashem Elokim gan be'eden bikedem, in the east. What does mikedem mean? That means not in the east, but mikedem means from mikadmon, from beforehand. Gehinom. How do we know that Gehinom came beforehand? Because it says in the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Ki aruch met mul tafte. So the hearth, the furnace, the burning area, aruch, was set up or ordained from beforehand. The way Rashi translates et mul over here, it was ordained on a day that only had it yesterday, but didn't have 2 days ago. What was the only day that had it yesterday, but not 2 days ago? It says it's the second day of Bria. On Yom Sheni of the creation, it had it yesterday, but it didn't have 2 days ago. So it was created on the day that only had it yesterday, and that's on the second day of creation. That's what the Gemara says in other places. The Gehinom was created on the second day of creation. Kisei Kavod. How do we know that the Kisei Kavod came before? And Dechtiv. Nachon Kisacha Meaz. The Perek Tehillim that we say, Hashem Maloch Kehud Lavesh. Nachon Kisacha Meaz means that your chair, your throne, was already prepared or put in place Meaz, from beforehand, way before. Beit HaMikdash, Tichtiv, because it says, Kisei Kavod, Marom Merishon, and then again, they're missing the last piece over here, which is Makom Mikdashenu, which is the end of that pasuk, which is that Kisei Kavod Marom Rishon, that the presence of Hashem, the throne of Hashem, is there. And then when is that? Makom Mikdashenu, in the place of our Mikdash. So that means that the location, the Kisei Kavod, from Mirishon, from the beginning, from the first time, was in the Mikdash. And that means that the Mikdash already existed then. Shmo Shel Mashiach, the name of Mashiach, because it says there, Yehi Shmo Le'olam, that his name should be forever. And then it says there, Lifnei Shemesh Yunin Shemo, before the sun was there, his name was Yunin. So that means again, that it happened prior to the creation of the sun. And that there, we already had Yishmo Le'olam. His name was already there forever. That it existed or pre-existed the creation. So Gemara says, so it can't be that Moshe Rabbeinu is asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create Gehinom. Because we found from the Breita that we just quoted from Makom Shenagu and Psachim, that there were Gehinom already existed prior to the creation of the world. Or at least according to Ran, it was Allah B'machshava beforehand. L'hochi Kamar. I'ivre le'puma. If there is a mouth for this Gehinom, Mutav, great. Vimlo, if there's no mouth to get into Gehinom, Yivra Hashem. Hashem should create it. It says, V'aktiv, Ein kochadash tachad Hashemesh. There's nothing new under the sun. Hashem doesn't create ex nihilo things that did not exist before. So how come if there's no mouth to Gehinom beforehand, Moshe Rabbeinu can't come and change that reality and make a mouth to Gehinom? He says, Hochi gamar. I lo mikra puma lahocha. If the mouth of Gehinom doesn't come around this location or doesn't exist in this location, Likarev, it should come now. So there was a mouth to Gehinom, so Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know where that was or what location of it was. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, wherever it is, it should make its appearance right here and swallow up these individuals. So again, then that's not Hadash Tachad Hashemesh. He didn't change anything. There was a mouth before, there's a mouth now. Just a question of where that location is. And that's Gehinom already existed. Moshe Rabbeinu is just simply saying that if the mouth is available, and maybe it's not here, bring it to this location and make it available. Dorosh Rovav Amri Lam Rabbi Yitzchak. My dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk in Chavakuk? Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula. That the sun and the moon were up in their habitation. Now, the Gemara plays on this and says, Shemesh V'Yareach B'Zvul Mabayin. What are the sun and the moon doing up in the upper spheres, in the upper heavens, in Zvul? What are they doing up there? The sun and the moon found in the Rekia. That's what we say in creation, that he put them in the Rekia. Milamed. What does that teach you? Shalom. Shemesh v'yareach mirekia lezvul. So the Shemesh v'yareach went from the Rekia and up to the upper sphere as vul. V'amru lefanav. Yibono shalom. They go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, we're on strike. Imatahu siddin leben Amram. If you support Moshe Rabbeinu, anu meirim. We'll go back to work. Vimlav, if you don't take care of Moshe Rabbeinu, ain't anu meirim. We're not going to be shining anymore. We're on strike. We're not going to work anymore. Boto sha'a yarabahen chitzin v'chanitot. That moment, Hashem sent arrows and daggers at them. Amalem, b'chol yom v'yom, every day in and day out, mishtachavim lachem. People come and bow down to you and worship you as avodah zarah. Batem meirim. And you go ahead. And you guys continue to work, you never go on strike. Bichvodi lo mechitem. You weren't on strike, and you were not jealous for my kavod. Bichvod basar v'dam mechitem. And here now you're standing up for Moshe Rabbeinu? You don't stand up for Hashem every day. So then, why won't you stand up for Moshe Rabbeinu? So that is a similar refrain that the Gemara has in Sanhedrin, in Perek HaChelek, this idea of mechitem mechvod basar v'dam, lo mechitem mechvodi, with regards to Pilegesh Begiva, and Pesel Micha. And of course, Baruch over there says, you didn't worry about Pesel Micha, that you weren't so worried about. My kavod, don't worry about it. Your kavod by Pilegesh Mikiva, all of a sudden you want to start a battle and kill out all of Binyamin? So Gemara uses the same terminology there. Bichvodilo mechitem, kavod basadam mechitem. So b'chol yom v'yom yorim b'hem chitzim v'chanitot u'meirim. Day in and day out now, they have arrows and daggers, javelins, lances thrown at them. Shenemar, la'or chitzecha yaleichun. It's a continuation of the pasuk in Chavakuk, is la'or chitzecha yaleichun. To the light of your arrows, they go. The way Rashi explains it over here is, mi'oto yom ve'elech, from that day onward, enan yonzin. They went on strike. Every day they went on strike. Mipnei shemishtachavim lehem ovdei kochavim. Because people are worshiping them as avodah zarah. And ad shemorim behem chitzim v'chanitot. Until they're forced to go out and do what they're supposed to do, they don't go out. So basically they did tshuva. And they said, well, Kodesh Baruch was upset that we were backing up Moshe Rabbeinu, and we didn't worry about him, so now we're going to worry about him. So every day we're going to go on strike and say we're not going to go out. And then they're going to have to shoot arrows at us and force us to go out. So why doesn't Kodesh Baruch Hu just not have them come out? So we have a basic principle that Hashem doesn't change the ways of nature just for every choteh. For every sinner, he's going to change things. Now they worship the sun and the moon. He has to change all of Teva, all of the creation. No, just because people are sinners doesn't mean that Hashem has to change the Bria to accommodate or to fix that problem. So basically, he forces the sun and the moon out every day, but they have a reluctance to go because of Kavod Shemayim and Kavod Hashem. Now, in terms of what the situation of Shemesh V'Yareach, the Ran over here explains that it's talking about Adat Korach, based on the fact that that Perek in Chavakuk has other statements about Yitziat Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yam Suf, and therefore it's dealing topically with issues like this that have to do with the Yitziat Mitzrayim. Truth is, it's not so simple because those psukim are afterwards, but at least thematically, it is a portion of that perek, and therefore the Gemara here believes that this Shemesh Yareach are referring to a story with regards to Adat Korach, or the rebellion of Korach. On the other hand, there is a dissenting opinion here, and that's the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam says, when it comes to Yoshua Bin Nun, we know that Yoshua Bin Nun, when he's fighting the battles with the kings in Canaan, he says, Shemesh B'Givon Dom, Yareach B'Emek Ayalon. That the sun and the moon should stop to allow him or give him more time in the day to finish the battle. Over there, Chazal tell us that that wasn't the first time this happened, but it also happened in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the time of the Milchemet Sichon Va'og. At that time also there was an Amidat Shemesh V'Yareach. And that's what Rabbeinu Tam claims that this story in the Gemara in Chavakuk is about. When it says about Shemesh V'Yareach, they go on strike and they say, Moshe Rabbeinu said, we need to stop because he wants to finish up the battle and to finish off with Sichon and Og. We're on strike because we want to take care of Moshe Rabbeinu. Taking care of Moshe Rabbeinu was in that battle with Sichon and Og, not about Adat Korach. That's the one dissenting opinion about the understanding of this Gemara, that the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that this is talking about a different case or a different issue where Moshe Rabbeinu needed help and they were willing to proffer that help and go on strike. And Kodesh Baruch Hu throws them back to go back to work. Or, it's talking about Adat Korach, again, another time that Moshe Rabbeinu needed help, and they come to Moshe Rabbeinu's defense. All right, now the Gemara continues here about the Gadat Bikur Cholim. Tanya, Bikur Cholim Ein La Shi'ur. This is what we discussed before. When it comes to Bikur Cholim, there is no Shi'ur. You can do as much as you want. There is no limitation in terms of Bikur Cholim. And Rosh Mishantz asks over here, how come in the morning when we say the Mishnah of Elul Dvarim She'enem Shi'ur, we don't include Bikur Cholim in that Mishnah? The answer he gives is because we mentioned Gemilut Chasadim. And since Bikur Cholim is a subset of Gemilut Chasadim, and through that we cover Bikur Cholim. Mayin La Shior, Savar of Yosef, the Meimar, Ain Shior the Matan Schara. Yosef thought maybe it has unlimited reward. Samalei Abayi, B'chol Mitzvot, Mi Shior the Matan Schara. Since when is there any limitation on the rewards that one gets from doing Mitzvot? Vatanan. We have a Mishnah in Avot that says, Avizayir mitzvah kalaki b'chamura. Person should be just as diligent and careful about the accomplishment of mitzvot, or small mitzvot, or seemingly small mitzvot, like serious and stringent mitzvot. Because no one can really assess the value of any mitzvah or any given mitzvah. And therefore, you should just do them all and make sure that you take care of all these issues, because which mitzvah is going to get you the best schar? Afilu gadol etzel katan. Rava Amar, afilu mea pe'amim biyom. Even 100 times a day. So here you have the two different opinions as to what it means. Abayi suggests is ein la shiur, is that there are no dispensations. Everybody's obligated, and there's no out, because it's beneath your dignity. Rashi over here says ein la shiur, the mitzvah katan kamo b'gadol. Because it's a mitzvah that's equally applicable to everybody. Even if you're a big gun, you still have to do the mitzvah Bikur Cholim and visit those that are beneath your dignity. And if you're a small guy, you still also have to do Bikur Cholim and visit people that are bigger than you. There's no limitations, there are no exemptions when it comes to Bikur Cholim. That's what it means, Ein La Shi'ur, that there's no limitation. As opposed to other mitzvot, like Hashavat Aveda, or prika and teina, those mitzvot which have limitations when it's zaken v'ena lifi kvodo. Someone who's elderly and it's beneath his dignity to pick up the aveda or to deal with the aveda, or the case of prika and teina, in that case he's allowed to hit the lehitalem. He can walk away and leave it there because it's beneath his dignity. It's not appropriate for him to do it, and that we do have dispensations for. By Bikur Cholim, we don't have that dispensation. That's what's Ein La Shiur. There's no Shiur, but there's no limiting factor here. Everybody is obligated in Bikur Cholim. It's not like those other mitzvot where there are exemptions when it's Ein Olufi Kvodo. Rova looks at it as Ein La Shiur, is that there's no limitation in terms of the accomplishment of the mitzvah. You can't just do the mitzvah and now you've discharged your obligation. The obligation is continuous. And as you continue to perform Bikur Cholim, you continue to rack up mitzvot by doing it. That's the classic sense of what we meant by Ein La Shiur. Amar Rabbi Acha bar Chanina, kol mevaker chule nutel echad mishishim bitzaro o mecholyo. Anybody goes to visit the sick individual, he takes away 1/60th of his pain or 1/60th of his ailment. If that's the case, why don't we just send 60 people in there to mevaker cholim? And now each one of them takes away 1/60th of the choli, and now he'll be cured. Well, great, easy solution to get him cured. It's similar to the 1/10th, based on the Beit Midrash of Rabbi, or Ben Gilo. So we'll explain this. What does that mean, Isuraito Debei Rabbi? So we know that as part of the Ketubah, the Benot Nikevot are entitled for their dowry to take 1/10th of the assets of the estate to use towards their wedding and their dowry. So now, over there, the Gemara asks the same question, which is the Tanya. We have a Braita. Rabbi Omer Batani Nizonet, Minechse Achin, a girl who is being sustained out of the brother's ownership in the estate. Notlot Isur Nechasim. They get 1/10th of the estate to pay for their dowry and pay for their wedding. Amrulo Rabbi Lidvarecha. According to you, Mishesh Lo Esther Banot Ubein, Ein Lo Lebein Makom Banot, Klom, if he has 10 daughters, 1 son, then if each daughter takes 1/10 of the possessions, they've taken all the possessions. Then the son's left with nothing. How could it be that Amar Lahen, Rabbi answers like you did, Rishonan Otelet Isur Nechasim. The first one takes 1/10. Shnia B'mesh Shaira. Then the number 2 takes whatever's left in the estate. She takes 10% of that. Shlishit B'mesh Shaira. And then number 3 takes whatever's left after 1 and 2 have taken it. So it's basically an asymptotic 10%. Which is that you keep iterating the 10%. You take out what property was already taken by one of the women, and then you add do the 10% again, and then you keep recalculating the 10% as you go along. And based on that, you won't use up all of the estate assets. By the way, the Gemara explains it depends if they get married in a sequential order. And in that case, we'll do it exactly like the Gemara describes over here. The first one will get, if there's 100, they will get 10% of 100, which is 10. The next one will get 10% of the remaining 90. So they only get 9. And then so on and so forth as you go through the line doing the calculation each time for the 10%. That is only true when they come sequentially to take out of the estate. But if they come bevat achat, we would do the same calculation, but then afterwards we re-pool all the assets and divide it up evenly. So even though you do this 10% by taking out and then measuring against the residual, you would take the sum total of all those 10%, put it together, and then re-divvy it up amongst the 10 daughters. If they get married in sequential order, then you can't necessarily do that. And then, yes, the first daughter has more benefits. She gets more dowry out of the estate than the latter daughters. So now that's the same thing over here by Bikur Cholim. When we say it takes away 1/60th of his sickness, the first one goes in, takes away 1/60th. The next one who goes in takes away 1/60th of the residual 59/60ths. So then each time you're going to do it, it's an asymptotic 1/60th. Now, whether 1/60th is the literal or is 1/60th, as the Maharsha says, that the Babylonian system was a base 6, base 60 system. And that's why 60 is such an important number in the Gemara. Boto b'shishim, because the fact that something in shishim, in 60, is basically meaningless. It's as if it doesn't exist. So over here too, when you take away 1/60th of the choleh, or the choleh, it just means you're taking away a small amount. Doesn't mean that it's exactly 1/60th, but rather it means you're taking away a very small amount of sickness. And then uben gilo. It has to be someone who, Rashi says over here, Ben Gilo means someone of a similar age. That it's a older person visiting an older person and a younger person visiting a younger person. On the other hand, the Rosh, the Ran, all over there say Ben Gilo is nolad b'mazalo, that they were born under the same mazal, under the same zodiac constellation, and therefore they have similarities between them. So what they're saying over here is that in order for it to be a beneficial Bikur Cholim, he has to be Ben Gilo. According to Rashi, means someone of the same age. According to the Rosh, the Ran, it's someone who has a similar mazal to this individual. Now, in the end, the concept is that we want someone to visit the Chole who's going to bring a certain amount of relief and a certain amount of benefit to the Chole. So the best way to do that is to match them up with someone who brings them pleasure, that they enjoy speaking with, and someone who will be engaging. So that may be that both of the answers are saying the same thing. Rashi is saying Ben Gilo should be the same age so that they have a certain amount of commonality. So that commonality will help them to engage. Or Ben Gilo means that they're born under the same mazal, because people born under the same mazal are similar in nature. And therefore he will enjoy the company of this individual because they share a common nature. So either way, the idea of Ben Gilo is a way to express the benefit of Bikur Cholim, which is providing a certain amount of hana'ah and engagement with the choleh, and the best way to do that is through Ben Gilo. Now, the Gemara in Baba Metzia that deals with this same topic and mentions the issue of Ben Gilo asks over there, why does the pasuk have to include Bikur Cholim separate from Gemilut Chasadim? It's really a subcategory of Bikur Cholim. So there, the Gemara says that even if he's Ben Gilo, he should visit him because that takes 1/60th of the sickness. Implying from that, that the taking of 1/60th of the sickness is not simply that you relieve the choleh from 1/60th of the sickness, but also that you actually take some of it, that it actually comes upon you. And despite that quote-unquote danger or difficulty in you assuming 1/60th of the sickness, nevertheless, you are compelled to go. And that's why Bikur Cholim is something of a different nature than regular Gemilut Chasadim. Over here, you have to give of yourself, which means take on some of the sickness of the choleh in order to bring him that relief. And that is part of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And that, seemingly from the Gemara in Bava Metzia, is the demand for Ben Gilo. That relief is only provided when the sickness moves from the individual to Ben Gilo, that there's some commonality between them that allows the party that's visiting to take away some of that sickness. Okay, now, Rav Chalbo chalash, Rav Chalbo fell ill, nofak achriz Rav Kana. Rav Kana went out and made an announcement. Rav Chalbo boish. Rav Chalbo is not in good shape. Whether the word boish means that he's chalah, that he got sick, or some say that the lashon of here is ba'ash. Ba'ash is used in the Torah by the makot. It says, ba'ash hayor. The or rotted. So that's the idea. Ba'ash means it's rotting. Something's bad about it. Or, by Yaakov Avin, it says, the habisheni. Shimon and Levi, when they killed Hashem, it says there, the habisheni. That you have now made me look bad to the other nations. So, no matter what the interpretation, it's clear here what the problem is, that things are not going well for him right now. Then, lo ika de ka'ate. Nobody showed up. Even after Rav Kana announced that Rav Chalbo was ill, there were no visitors coming to see Rav Chalbo. So, first of all, we learn here, and we're going to see in other places as well, that there is a value on announcing that the individual is sick. May not have to do it on the first day, but if a person falls sick and it's serious, should make an announcement about it so that people can daven for them. And that there is an importance in telling other people that the person is sick in order that they can pray for them and help them out. That's number one. Number two is, people need to go to visit the Choleh in order to benefit him. Rav Chalbo, who is ill, and Rav Kana is announcing that he's ill and nobody's responding to him. Amar lo, so now he gives them Musar. He gives them a drush and a Musar. Lo kach haya maaseh b'talmid achad mitalmidei Rabbi Kiva. Wasn't there an incident like this with one of the students of Rabbi Kiva? Shechala, he got sick. Lo nechnasu chachamim levakro. Nobody went in to visit him. V'nechnas Rabbi Kiva levakro. Rabbi Kiva went in to pay him a visit to do Bikur Cholim. Ubishvil shikibdo v'ribto. Because Rabbi Akiva took care of him, washed him, and took care of all that his needs were. So kibdo v'ribto lefanav chaya. He survived. Meaning that the Bikur Cholim of Rabbi Akiva led Rabbi Akiva to then engage with the Choleh and take care of him. And that resulted in the fact that he lived. Amale Rabbi Hechiyantani. His student says, Rabbi Akiva, you saved my life. So he's giving them Musar, because Yotza Rabbi Akiva Darash. Call me Shane Mivaker Chulim, anybody doesn't go and visit the sick. Kilo Shofech Damim, he's a killer. Because if a person goes in, he could save the life of the chole. And that's on multiple levels. Number one is what we saw before, that when you go to the Bikur Cholim, you take away 1/60th of the chole. So in that sense, you're giving him life or you're helping him out. And number two is like the sense of Rabbi Akiva. When you're Mivaker Chulim, you can see what the chole needs. When you see what the chole needs, you actually can provide for him and actually help him. And number three is that you can actually daven for him. You can see the difficulty or the position he's in, and then you can daven on his behalf, and you don't know when it'll be an eighth ratzon. So all of these opportunities are a way to save the life of the chole. So based on that, Rabbi Akiva went out in darshan. If you don't do bikur cholim, it's like you're killing the individual. And so that was the muster that Rav Kahana was giving to the people because they weren't visiting Rav Chelbo. And because of that, he was not being saved. And it's the Kilo Shofech Damim. So that's why Rav Kahana gave them the muster based on the story of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, we'll stop over here, 7 lines down on the top of Mem Amud Aleph.